And now, Sam Schlobaum will tell you about the bells of Arlington Street Church. And would the young people come forward and sit up here so he can tell you a story?
Don't worry, he doesn't bite.
And I have this barrier, so you can't. I won't be able to get to you. Don't worry. They come out of the woodwork. All right, so the Arlington Street Church tour is always an amazing tour. And this year, the Bounders captured its awesomeness in a whole new way for me. And I've been there like four times. Our tour guide was also their musical director. And he started the tour by showing us the 14 Tiffany stained glass windows that they have in that church. Now, Tiffany is this really old guy that's really good at making stained glass windows, and he made them 3D. We actually got to go up to them, and like their noses come out of the glass. It's really cool. And then after that, we went up to their organ that has 3,640 different pipes that each make their own sound. I know, I made that face too. And because he was their master of music, He got to play that organ for us, and he played Bach's Toccanada and Fugue in D minor, and I got that word wrong again. But in other words, it's Dracula theme music. And once we recovered from the organ, he led us into this back room and through some offices and way, and we had no idea where we were. And then we found this little closet that had some stairs in it, and they went up. And they kept winding around and around and got narrower and narrower and really steep. And they had a bunch of places for me to hit my head. It was great. And then finally we come up onto this landing that's in the middle of their bell tower. And there's like 16 ropes all tied to the base of a window. And they all go leading up into wherever above us. And after that, we learned that those ropes lead to the big bells that they have up there. Now, well, I'll explain that later. Never mind. So we figured out that we were going to play those bells. And we got to pull on them, and we divided up into teams of three so that everybody would get to play lots of bells while they were there, while they played their song, and everybody got to play their own song in their team. Now, I need to clarify something with you. We were in the middle of this church's bell tower. You know, classic church goes here, and then there's this tower thing. And it was nice and big. And up above us were these bells. Now, these are not tiny little jingle bells. These are bells. Like, I can stand up straight in the biggest of their bells. These are huge and make lots of sound. And there's no, like, windows or insulation up there. There's just these wooden slats that stop the rain from getting in and ruining their wonderful big bells. So the first team played their song, and it was wonderful. And it was as coordinated as a group of junior high people who have never played bells before pulling on a bunch of ropes can be. But it was still wonderful. And before the second team could get started, Sean asks their music director, now this is a direct quote because we wrote it down, "Can they hear these bells outside?" Huge bells. That quote stayed with us all for obvious reasons. It was hysterical. But it stayed with me because it pointed out so well that in our religion, we can go to a strange church that most of us have never been to before, and with no training or anything, a bunch of junior high youth can grab onto some ropes and ring those bells. Those 150-year-old bells that were given to the church by a good friend of the founder of modern Unitarian Universalism. And those youth can ring those bells for everyone for blocks around to hear. I bet you if you went to most any other church and asked them, "Can we ring your steeple bells?" they would have a similar reaction to King's Chapel, which would be, "Heh, no."
You've gotten a taste of the joy and fun that is a big part of our Boston pilgrimage. Joy is indeed sacred, but we also go to deeper and more serious places during our time. Throughout the trip, there are quiet and reflective moments, and I've seen our young people deeply affected by the stories and the experiences of being in historical and memorial spaces dedicated to people during times of slavery, the Holocaust, and the Boston Marathon bombing. I intentionally had us visit the New England Holocaust Memorial at night so that we could be there when they turned the lights on. We missed the lights. But as we stood and walked quietly through the towers, the rain started lightly and then developed into a steady downpour. But we stayed as long as we could. I'm not going to look at them. These phenomenal young people had the experience of finding their emotional balance between having a great time with their friends on a trip away from home and facing the reality of the horrors and cruelty that can happen in this life. It was an honor and a privilege to accompany them on this journey. Join us this morning on a journey from joy to sorrow and back again, affirming that we all are indeed divine and fabulous. Now we can move the easels forward.
The New England Holocaust Memorial lies on Union Street near the north end of Boston, Massachusetts. A concrete pathway runs under the six 50-foot-tall towers constructed of glass panels, which are lit at night and are named after and represent the six deadliest concentration camps constructed in Poland during 1939 to 1945, where the horrific gas chambers were erected in Chelmno, Treblinka, Maschenek, Sobibor, Auschwitz-Birkenau, and Belzec. The 6 million numbers of the 6 million Jews who were killed, which were tattooed on their forearms, are etched into the glass. On additional glass panels at the base of the towers are deeply moving stories of survivors. Grates are placed over pits located under each of the towers, which emit steam, which may represent the smoke of the cremation buildings and the towers of smokestacks. Each has small stationary lights and one moving light amidst the dark concrete. On the side of the pathway, in between the towers, are facts that put the numbers in context. At the end of the pathway are large black rocks with timelines and longer quotes on them. A great weight is sensed in the air, the memory of the 13 million slaughtered by Nazi Germany. There's no shelter from the colder rain, like the night we visited, but one can only imagine the inhumanities committed and the suffering endured during this dark time in history.
Those towers are supposed to be lit up at night. Pillars of light to remind us of the terrors of our history. Why I light them up escapes me. When I saw them, they were not lit except for the lights of the coals beneath our feet. Coals that could be anything or anyone. Standing beneath that tower, through the smoke, I could not see the top. Seemingly, the numbers went on forever, ascending even the sky. Those who walked around me, mere dark shadows moving in the mist. One is unable to tell if such shadows are ones one knows, or even shadows of the living. In that place, I would not be surprised by the dead. In places like that, I have a nasty tendency towards complete empathy, to feel hate and pain. to understand the horror and the heat, the fire beneath my feet. So many, when they talk about such things, they speak of the unimaginable. I've never known what they mean. I have always been able to close my eyes and hear the screaming. Burning ovens and burning cities. When I open my one good eye, the other taken from me so long ago, I know that places like that are best when shrouded in darkness. Not so that we cannot see, but so that we can truly see.
Six glass towers. There are rains that seep through your skin, straight through to your core, making a young soul weary. And however you try to hunch away and ignore it, the cold still reminds you that you're alive. But in a place like this, a rain like this, living only reminds you of the dead. The twilight gray shadows wrap you in their arms. The towers are supposed to be lit, but somehow the pencil-smeared darkness makes the whole place feel real. The only illumination to penetrate this in-between light are tiny blue twinkles beneath the grate of each tower. You wonder if they were the constellations above each smokestack, if they were the last stars millions saw. Steam distorts the glass so that you smudge it with a numb fingertip to read one of the millions of numbers. Maybe you tell yourself, if I can just remember one of these. That was the cunning and cruelty of numbers. They take away a person's first and last identity. A number is not a human being. You read off the accounts, but your voice doesn't matter. Whatever sad magic or memory lingers in the air transforms it into the whispers of 6 million. You can feel the ghosts around you, not the frightening or comical kind, but nostalgia for something you never experienced, like a black and white photograph held up against where it was taken, a piece of history standing right next to you with only time between. Looking down the path, you see the people you know become strangers, obscured by the steam, shadowed and half-formed specters. This place has turned us all into ghosts. But then, it's time to leave. It's a heavy sort of gratitude that you drag behind you as you depart from the place haunted by more than just sadness. Glancing back, the towers are smokestacks. Spouting the last burnt essence of human souls. Blink, and the white clouds of steam, only steam, hang in the air above the crystalline pillars before being swept away by a June wind. A word follows them as they rise and fall through the rain over a city that is so beautiful, so old, and so very alive. It is a command, a hope, a promise. Remember.
So on Saturday, we went to the Arlington Street Church pre-Pride service. And as you know, Boston is an open-minded city. The pre-Pride service was one of my favorite events during the trip. The people there were welcoming and accepting. The service had an appropriate amount of joy and happiness while contained the perfect amount of reality. When walking in, a sense of community filled the room. I was moved by the amount of compassion and openness that people displayed towards one another. Although people may have had different beliefs and not have had the same sexual orientation, They are there for the same reason, to show their support for same-sex marriage. The day was celebrated with music performed by their church band, and the happiness was contagious and uplifting. The people there weren't, the service wasn't just filled with singing and beach balls, though. At one point of the service, people would say the names of the ones they loved who had taken their lives. That moment was full of sorrow, yet moving. My heart goes out to the ones who are still grieving and affected.
Hi, I'm Linnea Boyce, not Beck Dangler. Sorry to disappoint. At Pride, we sang, danced, listened, and thought about love. The debate on marriage equality is serious, but Arlington knows how to do what that day was for, celebrate, and have pride. Love is love, and something that is apparent at Pride service was that Unitarian Universalists love love. The Sunday following the Pride service, we went to King's Chapel for a service because we wanted to compare our services to a conservative UU church. This was not, as I will explain later, an accurate description. We showed up in our nicer clothes, maybe a bit disappointed that there weren't any sparkly streamers, but a sign at the front did state that they accept people of any sexuality or gender. Another sign declares King's Chapel a Christian Unitarian church. I remember thinking, wait, where's the other you? Little did I know, this was only the beginning. They started off similarly to our services, introducing newcomers, sharing joys and sorrows, asking everyone to turn off their cell phones. Then, to my surprise, the minister starts talking about Jesus. Jesus? In church? What is this? I probably should have noticed how it said Christian Unitarian Church. We even read the Lord's Prayer. Apart from the initial shock of Jesus, the service was interesting, although much more formal than any of Booth's, especially this one. It was actually a youth Sunday, and they apologized for it being too informal compared to their regular service. Despite the different structure and mood, King's Chapel was still very accepting, encouraged the children to ask questions, and had a great sense of community. I forget that originally Unitarian Universalism was a Christian religion, and this helped to understand what its beginnings were like.
When traveling to Boston, I was able to experience the feeling of being independent and on my own. Without my parents alongside of me, I had the ability to make my own judgment without having a second opinion of someone else. I felt like I had the right amount of supervision and guidance with a touch of freedom. The trip gave me an idea about what college would be like and what it would feel like. I don't have the desperate longing to venture out into the world on my own. And I believe that an adventure should have the company around you, but you should also be able to depend on yourself and be independent. There seems to not be the right amount of the perfect balance between guiding your children to the perfect path while letting them learn their own lessons, and Boston gave me that right balance.
In Boston, we did this scavenger hunt on the Freedom Trail. It was not a competition. The Freedom Trail was a trail that ran through much of Boston, and what it showed was historical events, many historical figures, and a lot of historical buildings. There were some very interesting and comical moments during the scavenger hunt. Like, there was this one part where on the scavenger hunt it said, "Standing in opposition." What's that supposed to mean? Well, let me tell you. We were looking around the area that it was supposed to be in when I happened to look down at the ground and right there at my feet were 2 feet on a plaque, and what it said was opposition at the top. Get it? Later, I was told that my face kind of just lit up. Another interesting thing that happened was that at the very end of the first day of the scavenger hunt, there were 2 days of this non-competition scavenger hunt. When we got to the end of the first day, there were these fountains, and I don't remember whose idea it was, but we found ourselves jumping in the fountains like little kids. I can just imagine someone thinking, what a strange sight, 8 teenagers playing in the fountains like they were still in elementary school. But it was not just messing around. It was also a learning experience. I mean, do you know how many historical figures there that were Unitarian? Me neither, but there were a lot. I do remember one of them was Colonel Shaw, leader of the 54th Regiment Massachusetts Volunteer Infantry. Wow. The first all-black regiment of the Civil War. Many of the other Unitarian freedom fighters helped the slaves during the Civil War. At the very end of the trail was the USS Constitution. Used during the War of 1812, it is still a commissioned United States Navy ship. And that was the Freedom Trail scavenger hunt, featuring the Boston Bounders.
On our second day in Boston, we got to tour Fenway Park, and we went to a Red Sox game later in the day. And I thought touring Fenway was cool because of all its histories and the stories that went along with it. Going to Fenway just proved that there's absolutely nothing in Boston that doesn't have history. It was also really cool to stand on top of the Green Monster, you know, just a giant wall. And after the tour, we even got to see 2 official World Series rings on this kind of creepy old man. Between the tour and the game, we went to a burger place nearby where we met up with a local UU youth group. That's fun to say. It was also cool getting to meet the UU youth because I don't really know any UUs that aren't, you know, here. And I also have to point out that they unfortunately had better Boston accents than us. At the burger place, we publicly sang Lean On Me for about the 10,000th time in the trip so far, and it was only the second day. So then we went to the Red Sox game, and I thought it was especially fun to go to a professional baseball game because I've been to professional football game and just recently basketball, and those are much more about winning, and it seemed going to a baseball game was just about, you know, going out and having fun and, you know, just having a good night. But it was the 7th inning and getting late, so we had to leave the game early. And we found out later that the Red Sox won in a walk-off homer in the bottom of the ninth. And another thing that I think for almost all of the Boston Bounders that was a unanimous favorite was the Arlington Street Church Pride Service. Service was really fun and reminded us all the best things about being UU. From people all over Boston and even farther, like us, came together to dance and sing while being fabulous and divine. Another thing I'll definitely remember from our Boston trip was all the friendships that I made there and throughout the whole Boston Bounder experience.
Going to Boston was a great experience, to spend a week with other youth who share a faith, and to go to a city where nearly everyone knows, or at least everyone shares, or at least knows of, our tiny little spiritual organization. Becoming a part of and getting to know the UU community and UU youth nationally and see that there are actually other UUs and that we do have somewhat of an impact somewhere and somehow was a very significant part of the trip for me. Starting new friendships with other UUs from far and wide and being introduced to the national UU community and to people who share our beliefs and interests who will come to know in the years to come was and is definitely worth doing.
We've been to Boston, and now we're back home again, better for the time together. You've had a glimpse of the living history, the church experience, and the sense of deepened community that were integral parts of our pilgrimage. You've heard our Boston Bounders relate the visceral experience of memorials, and we remember. The wonder of discovering that their faith tradition is a part of a greater whole, and how they connected not only with each other as friends and fellow travelers, but with their own inner strength and sense of freedom. The Boston trip could not happen without the support of this congregation, and we thank you from the depths of our hearts.